You know that feeling when you walk into one of those massive international auto shows?
Oh, yeah, where the lights are all dim and dramatic.
Exactly. The lights are low. There's that like pulsating music echoing through the whole convention center. And right there in the absolute center of the room, sitting on a slowly rotating pedestal, is the concept car.
Oh, man, the one with doors that open vertically like swan wings.
Yes.
And like an entirely glass undercarriage or
Yeah.
dashboard that looks like it belongs on a starship or something.
Right. And you're just standing there behind the velvet rope, completely mesmerized by it. You take a dozen photos, you're thinking, wow, we are living in the future.
Yeah, it's a total spectacle.
It is. But then the spell kind of breaks. You look a little closer and you realize there's no actual engine under the hood.
Yeah, right. Because it supposedly runs on, I don't know, a hypothetical algae fusion battery that hasn't even cleared regulatory testing yet.
Exactly. You certainly couldn't fit your groceries in the back of this thing. And most importantly, you cannot buy it. You can't drive it off the lot today and use it for your morning commute.
No.
It's purely a shiny, futuristic flex.
I mean, the entire purpose of that vehicle is literally just to dominate the headlines the next day, right? Not to actually solve your transportation problems.
And that exact disconnect, that huge gap between the shiny rotating pedestal and your daily commute, that is basically the best way to describe the aftermath of a major tech keynote.
Oh, 100%.
Because we are unpacking the recent Google I/O 2026 announcements today for this deep dive. And if you tuned into any of that presentation, the sheer volume of new features was just
It
deafening.
was a lot. The demos were flawlessly polished. I mean, incredibly futuristic.
Right. But for you, the listener, the person who is actually trying to get work done, it kind of leaves you standing behind that velvet rope again.
Yeah, you see the spectacle, and you just wonder, okay, but what is the practical vehicle I can actually drive off the lot today?
Exactly. What can I use right now for free without having to manage yet another premium subscription?
Which is such a valid question.
And that is our mission today. We are cutting through all that concept car noise. We're actually using a really sharp video breakdown by Tracy from just Awai Media as our map for this.
Yeah, Tracy's stuff is great.
It really is. Her overarching philosophy is what she calls human-centered. She argues you do not have to chase every single new tool that gets announced.
Thank goodness.
Right. You only need to extract the specific utilities that actually remove friction from your day.
And I think Tracy's approach there, it immediately validates that massive sense of information fatigue so many people are feeling right now.
Oh, completely.
She just bypasses all that hypothetical 10 years in the future tech, and she points us directly to the most fundamental everyday upgrade Google rolled out, which starts with Gemini 3.5 Flash becoming the default model.
Okay, yeah. Let's unpack the mechanics of that because Tracy notes that Gemini 3.5 Flash is now the default across Google Search and basically most of the Google Workspace apps.
Right.
But, and this is the thing, Google specifically describes this model as lightweight.
They do.
And whenever a giant tech company uses the word lightweight, it usually translates to, a heavily restricted, lobotomized version of their real product.
Yeah, it sounds like corporate speak for not as smart.
Exactly. So why should we care about what sounds like a downgraded model? If older AI models were like hiring a PhD researcher who takes 3 days to get back to you, is Gemini 3.5 Flash just like having a super fast intern sitting at a desk?
Actually, that is a great way to think about it. The word lightweight here is an engineering triumph, not a downgrade in utility at all.
It really a triumph.
Yeah, we have to separate the raw parameter count from practical latency. Because in the past few years, using a highly capable AI model meant dealing with this massive cloud computing bottleneck.
Right, it took forever sometimes.
Exactly. You send a query, it joins a queue on a massive server farm somewhere. The model has to process billions of parameters just to answer a really simple question,
Yeah.
and you're just waiting.
Oh, I see.
So lightweight means Google has optimized the architecture so much that it requires vastly less compute power to actually generate a response.
Okay, so it's kind of the difference between trying to route every single tiny local traffic dispute through the Supreme Court.
Oh, that's a perfect analogy.
Versus having a highly capable local magistrate who can just resolve the issue immediately. I mean, the Supreme Court is obviously more powerful, but the local magistrate actually clears the bottleneck for your everyday stuff.
That is exactly the dynamic.
Yeah.
And because the compute cost is so much lower for them, Google can actually afford to make it the default experience everywhere for free.
Wow, no setup required.
None. Without requiring you to sign up for a premium subscription or configure an API key or anything, it shifts AI from being a destination like a specific app you have to open and log into to being ambient.
It's just there.
Right. It's just sitting there in the search bar or in your email draft, operating with near zero latency.
And Tracy brings up a few highly practical use cases for this that I love, like rewriting an email to adjust the tone, or summarizing a dense 10-page document you just don't have time to read before a meeting.
Yeah, or drafting a quick caption, just brainstorming content ideas.
Exactly. These aren't tasks that require a model to possess the sum total of human knowledge. They just require immediate, low-friction execution.
And that lack of friction is the true democratizing factor here. You don't have to navigate some complex prompting dashboard. By removing the wait time and the paywall, this ambient fast response model just integrates right into your natural workflow.
It handles all the administrative heavy lifting.
Yeah, so you can actually focus on higher order thinking.
Okay, so text and daily admin tasks are one thing. We've had a few years to kind of get used to large language models handling text.
Great.
But video and visual design are entirely different beasts. Historically, if you want to create high quality visual content, you hit a massive wall of friction.
Oh, it's a huge barrier.
Right. You either need expensive specialized software or you need to spend 6 months learning how to use it.
Yeah. Visual media has always had a fundamentally higher barrier to entry.
Yeah.
I mean, text is linear, but video is multidimensional.
Definitely. I mean, if you've ever tried to edit a short form video from scratch, you feel that friction immediately.
It's brutal.
You're trying to figure out keyframes and color grading and transition timing. It's exhausting. And Tracy introduces a tool from I.O. that essentially bypasses that entire technical learning curve.
OmniFlash for YouTube Shorts.
Yes. Here's where it gets really interesting. Because traditional editing is like trying to build a house without power tools. OmniFlash basically gives you the framed house. You just have to paint it.
OmniFlash is fascinating because of the specific technical hurdle it finally clears. It's a free AI generator designed for short-form video, but the crucial detail Tracy focuses on is its native handling of motion and physics.
Which has always been the problem, right? Motion and physics have been the dead giveaway for AI video.
Always.
Up until recently, AI-generated video looked like this bizarre, morphing dreamscape. Things would just melt into each other. A person would walk through a solid table.
Spooky spaghetti hands.
Yeah. So how is a free tool suddenly handling actual physics?
Well, it comes down to a concept called temporal consistency.
Okay, what is that?
So early video diffusion models didn't actually understand motion at all. They just generated a sequence of static images that looked somewhat related, frame by frame.
Ah, so it was just guessing.
Pretty much. And when you strung them together, the objects lacked permanence, which is what caused that melting, flickering effect you're talking
right.
about.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But OmniFlash is built on an architecture that inherently understands spatial awareness and temporal tracking. It maintains the geometry of an object across time.
Oh, wow.
So, like, if a glass of water tips over in the video, the physics engine understands how water should realistically spill and splash, rather than just hallucinating blue pixels randomly across the frames.
Okay, wait. I have to push back here.
Go for it.
If this highly polished physics engine is completely free and it does all the heavy lifting of rendering realistic motion, won't YouTube just become an absolute wasteland of millions of identical, hyper-realistic AI videos?
That is the fear.
I mean, if everyone has the exact same pristine rendering engine, how does anyone stand out? Doesn't everything just look the same?
That is the inevitable market consequence if creators misuse the tool.
Yeah.
And it's exactly why Tracy is very careful to label OmniFlash as a starting point.
Starting point, yep, yeah.
The AI is essentially acting as a highly competent technical director.
Mm-hmm.
It handles the lighting, the camera angles, the physics of the scene. But a technically perfect video of a glass falling over is still incredibly boring.
Right. It has no soul.
Exactly. It has no soul. Tracy argues that the creator's job shifts from being a technician to being a visionary. You have to step in and add your voice, your specific message, and your unique stylistic choices.
Because the baseline of technical perfection is now $0.
Exactly. The AI gives you the structural polish for free, which means the only scarce resource left, the only thing that will actually capture an audience's attention, is your unique perspective.
That makes a lot of sense. The value moves from the execution of the media to the conception of the media.
Beautifully put.
And Tracy points out that Google is actually applying this exact same operational philosophy to static design now with a tool called Google Pix.
Right, Google Pix. It's positioned as a sort of direct competitor to Canva inside the workspace ecosystem. though it's not fully released yet.
Right. But the vision here is to make professional design operations accessible to groups that normally operate with heavy resource constraints. Like Tracy specifically calls out educators, nonprofits, and small teams.
Yeah, because if you are running a local nonprofit, you know, you do not have the budget to retain a creative agency for your social media campaign.
No way. You are usually just hacking things together in MS Paint or something.
And Google Pix solves that by pulling templates, brand kits, and rapid graphic generation into one unified workspace.
Yeah.
It just commoditizes the operational side of design.
So you don't need a dedicated designer to make sure the hex codes and fonts match perfectly across 100 different assets.
Right. The system enforces that cohesion automatically.
Okay. Let's connect the dots on all of this because the implications are massive here. Google is equipping literally every person with an internet connection with tools that completely eliminate the friction of creation.
Yep.
You get ambient instant text generation with Gemini Flash.
Yeah.
You get flawless physics-based video rendering with OmniFlash. You get enterprise-level design cohesion with Google Pix.
It's a lot of power.
It is. We are talking about a tsunami of synthetic media about to hit the web. So my question is, how do we as an audience trust anything we are looking at?
Well, that is the existential question of the web right now. And Google's answer to it is perhaps the most significant structural change Tracy discusses in her breakdown.
Okay, what are they doing?
We are officially entering an era defined by content provenance. Because Google is rolling out C2PA ID detection natively across Chrome and Search.
C2PA, I mean, that sounds like an obscure regulatory acronym. What is the actual mechanism here? Like, how does Chrome actually know if an image of a sunset was taken by a photographer or generated by OmniFlash?
So C2PA stands for the Coalition for Content Provenance and Authenticity.
Okay.
And it operates far deeper than just a simple visual watermark.
Because watermarks can just be cropped out.
Exactly. They can be cropped or visually scrubbed by another AI.
Right.
C2PA relies on cryptographic metadata.
Meaning it's baked into the code of the file itself.
Yeah, it acts like a digital ledger.
Yeah.
When a piece of synthetic media is generated by a compliant AI tool, or on the flip side, when a real photograph is taken by a compliant camera sensor, a cryptographic signature is attached directly to the file.
Oh, wow.
And it tracks the origin and any subsequent edits. So when you load an image in Chrome, the browser reads that cryptographic ledger and automatically displays a label if the content was synthetically generated.
Wow. So what does this all mean for us? It's kind of like the digital equivalent of a nutrition label on our food.
Oh, that's a really good way to frame it.
Right. Like, the FDA doesn't just look at a box of cereal and guess what's in it. They require a verifiable chain of ingredients. Society eventually decided you have a fundamental right to know if what you're putting in your body is synthetically made in a lab or organically grown.
Yep.
So C2PA is essentially the browser acting as the FDA for your information diet, just reading the digital ingredients list.
The nutrition label is a highly accurate way to visualize it. And Tracy highlights the philosophical intention behind this rollout, too. She states very clearly that this labeling is not about punishment, but it is about transparency.
Okay, but I have to wonder about the reality of that, though.
What do you mean?
Well, if every AI-generated image gets an automatic synthetic warning label slapped across it right in the browser, doesn't that inherently stigmatize the content?
Interesting point.
Like, if you put a warning label on something, human psychology dictates that people will recoil from it. Won't creators just feel punished by the algorithm for using the exact free tools Google just gave them?
Well, the stigma is a real risk, yes.
Yeah.
Especially creators try to pass off synthetic media as reality.
Mm.
But Tracy's advice here is to fundamentally change how you view the label.
Okay.
She tells creators to be intentional because transparency is the new normal.
Right.
You cannot fight the browser-level cryptography. It's just going to be there.
So how do you use it strategically then?
You deploy artificial efficiency when the reality of the image doesn't impact the message.
Give me an example.
So if you are writing a blog post about time management and you need a header graphic of a clock melting or something abstract,
right?
An AI-generated image is perfect for that. The audience doesn't care that the melting clock isn't real. The synthetic label doesn't hurt you at all.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But Tracy warns, you must use real, verifiable photos when authenticity is the core value of the message.
Right. So if you are an investigative journalist reporting on a protest or an educator teaching a real historical event, an AI-generated photo actively destroys your credibility.
Exactly. because the audience requires truth in those specific contexts. The technical tools are effortless now. The actual skill of the modern creator is the editorial judgment.
It's knowing when to deploy artificial efficiency and when to insist on human authenticity.
Right. The software does the making. You do the deciding.
I love that. And that brings everything Tracy outlined into a really cohesive, practical framework for you, the listener. Let's bring this all together, because our mission today was to find the tools you can actually use right now without getting overwhelmed.
Yeah. And the overarching theme of her four-step plan is to just stop treating AI as a separate complex discipline. Start treating it as a standard utility.
Step one.
Step one. You lean into Gemini 3.5 Flash because it removes the daily friction of administrative tasks without the latency of older models.
Step.
You leverage OmniFlash when it drops to handle the complex physics of video rendering, freeing you up to focus on the actual creative narrative.
Which leads to step three. As you use these tools, you embrace the C2PA transparency. Be mindful with your AI images. You don't hide the fact that you're using AI to scale your ideas, but you vigorously protect your authenticity when it comes to real human moments.
Exactly. And step four is just to keep learning. AI isn't slowing down, but you do not have to chase every shiny concept car that rolls out onto the keynote stage.
No, you really don't.
You just keep the specific tools in your toolbox that actually help you work smarter. It is a much healthier, much more sustainable way to interact with technology. You remain the architect. The AI is just the raw material.
It completely demystifies the hype cycle. I mean, practical, human-centered AI guidance without the hype is totally achievable.
Absolutely.
But, you know, this whole discussion we just had about C2PA cryptography and the automatic labeling of synthetic media, it leaves me with one final thought to throw out to you before we wrap up.
Oh, all right. Let's hear it.
If we are truly entering a world where flawless, physics-perfect video and beautifully rendered design are entirely free, instantaneous, and available to billions of people.
Which we are.
Right. And if every single piece of that synthetic content is going to carry a digital nutrition label, then perfection is about to become the absolute cheapest commodity on the internet.
Wow. Yeah, when perfection is everywhere, it completely loses its value.
Exactly. So will the ultimate premium content of the future simply be anything that is cryptographically verified to be made entirely without AI? Think about it.
That is wild.
The typos, the slightly off-center camera angles, the visible struggle of a real human trying to articulate a complex thought. Is human imperfection about to become the ultimate luxury brand?
What a fascinating reversal. The struggle itself literally becomes the proof of value.
Think back to that massive auto show we talked about at the beginning. Maybe the most valuable, sought-after car in the room isn't the flawless AI design hovercraft spinning on the pedestal.
Right.
Maybe it's the classic car parked out back with the manual transmission, where you can actually feel the friction of the road beneath the tires. Something to mull over the next time you sit down to create.